This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald.
I'm Ramya Amadhin, and this is Kelly and Ramya.
Welcome back to the program. Ramya Amadhin, Kelly McDonald, host of Kelly and Company. Thanks for being with us, folks. You ever wonder how confused Ryman gets when he has to jump from one thing to another? Like, he wears different hats around the network. And whether he's telling sports, whether he's helping out on the morning show, whether he's in here with us being co-producer, speaking on the program, or teching. Must get confusing, Ram.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
I'm tired just saying
90% of those things he's doing at the same time.
Good grief, it tires you out. Wow. Anyway, you know what to do when we're getting tired.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, bring in Danielle McLaughlin because she'll fill the segment for us. Let's bring her on with Know Your Rights.
Let's examine questions that can't be answered by a simple yes or no. Join me, Danielle McLaughlin, when we talk about how freedoms collide on Know Your Rights.
And colliding they shall. We're going to talk a little politics, the environment of politics on today's segment with Danielle. So she'll fill a lot of time in today with this one because, in my opinion, there's quite a bit to think about and talk about and make us say, well, I have a feeling a couple times, I don't know. Because of certain revelations, several people have had their names withdrawn from the political parties they have chosen to represent in elections. Okay, Danielle, welcome back to the show, first of all.
Well, hello, and I'm so glad you realize how important opinions are, Kelly, because that's what we're talking about today, our opinions. Mm. These are, you know, there are very few facts that we're going to reveal here. There are a few, but mostly it's about your opinion, my opinion, and, you know, where we're going to go.
And what we perceive or wonder or feel is our right to know, right? We should be well informed. I think that's true. So here's the question we'll kick this off with. How much should we know about people who choose to run for office in Canada?
Well, I think this is a really interesting question. And the reason I do is that if you've been keeping an eye on the upcoming Ontario election, you will have seen that a certain party has fired three candidates. I think we're at three as of this week, for things that they found out about them, about their past. One of them was a candidate who had written a book, and two others were people who had in their youth expressed opinions. Now, the thing about opinions is that they've been known to change over time. I'm sure that something that you believed strongly in when you were 13 or 14, you might not believe so strongly now. The thing that people my age have as a benefit is that we didn't have social media or other ways of publishing our spurious or otherwise opinions.
That's right. So it took a bit for people to find out you were smoking weed. Oh, and now that's off the table.
No, yeah, it wasn't even smoking weed. It was strong political opinions in my youth, most of which I haven't drawn back from, but some I have. Yeah. Some I have. And, you know, one of my favorite things talking to high school students about, you know, how old you should be to vote, and you may know that there's a political party that wants to lower the age of voting to 16. Is I ask how many people have made a decision or a choice as, say, a 14 or 15-year-old that they really wish they hadn't.
Yeah.
And I'm talking to 17-year-olds, right?
Yeah. Well,
and virtually everybody raises their hands. So the question is, if we find out something about a political candidate from their time as a teenager, should that actually disqualify that person from running? And I'm having some difficulty with that because in one case of the person who was fired, he was an adult when he wrote a book. In two of the cases that I'm aware of, the so-called offenders were teenagers. In one case, we don't know why a certain person was fired from their candidacy. But we need to contrast this with the fact that if you are a citizen of Canada and you are over 18, you have the right to run for office so long as you can qualify for certain, you can get the right numbers of signatures and things like that. It's a very small group of people who do not qualify. Among them are people who are currently in prison. So if you have served your time for an offense for which you were convicted and you're out, you can run for office. Sure. Whether you'll be elected is going to be up to the voters.
But you are able, because in that viewpoint, you have made a correction. You have atoned for what you have done. So it obviously opens it a little more for people to say, yeah, okay, but he's seen the folly of his ways, which that doesn't mean a thing if a person, just because a person has served the time.
Well, that's right. And not only that, if you've been accused but never convicted, that doesn't have any bearing on your ability to run for office. And we've seen, for example, in the United States, that a wide variety of people have been accused of a wide variety of offenses, mm-hmm. Some of whom have withdrawn their candidacy. Some famously, like a former president of the United States, upon whom it clearly had no effect whatsoever, mm-hmm. That he had been accused. He had not been convicted. But, you know, what should we really know about candidates? And in the olden days, as my grandchildren like to say, we knew what the media published about candidates. And because there was no social media, what they published was stuff that was pretty much on the record. So things that you would know about somebody is, for example, where they had gone to school. If they themselves had published anything, you would know about that. If they had awards, if they had previously run for office, or if they've been previously elected to office, you would know all of that. You might know, whether or not they were married, had children, what communities they had lived in. Those sort of very basic facts. To find out more than that about a candidate was quite shocking. You know, if it were a matter of public record that the person had been convicted of an offense, you might find out about it. You might even not find out about it.
Well, and this goes back to what I said, Danielle, when I wasn't referring to you either, about the weed thing. That would be our thing that we would zero a lot in. It was said that back in university, said politician did this with, and it was usually smoking weed. Now, because of the legalization, we've moved on to other things.
Well, isn't that interesting? Because if you look far enough back, you can say, well, what they did was at the time against
illegal.
The law.
Right.
Yeah. So should we say, well, you know, if they, had performed an act that was illegal, illicit, how about immoral? Where are we going to... You know, we need to think about this. So what happens if a candidate apologizes for what they've been found to have done? Now, if we think about our prime minister, who has famously had been seen before he was a candidate for anything, but seen in blackface at a party, we have one of the candidates who was fired, who at the age of 13, remember that number, had apparently... posted on social media a homophobic slur, a word that we, do not like to hear. And he had posted this. He was fired for having done that. We know that various people in the United States have appeared in all sorts of costumery, which is offensive to at least some people. These things happened. Many of the times they've apologized. They've said, I was young. I didn't know what I was doing. I certainly don't feel that way now. I don't believe that what I said, was appropriate. All of these things that people have apologized for. Is that enough? What do you think?
Well, to me, Danielle, I think that one step forward from a couple years ago or several years ago when people were not apologizing or people were not understanding the offense they were giving out by, either their history or whatever, like things that just don't sit well now that they had done in the mm-hmm. past. At one point, to me, I thought, okay, yeah, we're leaning towards a better future because people are realizing, okay, I shouldn't have done that, or I did that, but that was in my past. And as you can tell, I've, I'm not that person anymore. But now it sort of feels like we're on the other end of the spectrum where we just won't forgive people. We won't let people's past be in their past. And some of these things are just like very, for me at least, as it, again, it is an opinion, but for me at least, it's straight cut answers. Like, you were a teenager, you were a kid, you were living in a different time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And now this shouldn't be affecting the way that we think of you as a person now. Like, I'm sure there's recent history and evidence of these people's, you know, jobs being important to them, the way that they present themselves being sound to the public to get to know them. And sometimes the way that we pull things out of people's past, it's like we're saying, aha, and this is why. You can't
it's
trust
a gotcha
this person.
But that's why you're
it's
doing
a gotcha.
It. That's why you're
and
doing it.
And that's why because, we're doing it. Yeah. But it's gone to a point where then where do we stop? And what do we stop at?
What used to be mudslinging really, is now career ending is the attempt.
Ending. And it doesn't look, in my, the way I think about it, it doesn't make us look great anyway. You know, because we've thrown all these people into the garbage chute and say, forget it, forget this artist, forget this entertainer, forget this politician because of X, Y, and Z that they've done 20 plus years ago, you know, that system seems a little weird to me.
Yeah. Well, I struggle that with approach. Someone getting in a costume who may put themselves in blackface. Because they're playing, if I went to a costume party at 14 and I was a fan of a certain, well, Muhammad Ali, I would look silly, you know, if I wasn't of, you know, I'm dressing up as the person, the makeup, the character, if you were in a movie play or something like that for school and you were doing, we used to understand that kind of thing and say, okay, but I would have to know at 14, yeah, well, I want to be on the air. I want to be a political candidate. I better not do this at that point in life. And then on the other hand, as you mentioned earlier, some people seem to, oh, he's a bad boy. Yeah, vote him in. He'll defend us.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what he's done. Vote him in.
So this comes to the question is, who should be making these choices? Should we tell political parties, get rid of these guys because it looks bad on the party and the party will say, oh, you're right. You know, we can't uphold, our party's standards if we have somebody like this running. Or should we say, look, this person has the charter democratic right to run for office.
That's now, right. And I have the right to say I buy into the fact that they're this kind of a creep. I'm not voting.
Exactly. And nobody is going to compel the voter to vote for somebody. Now, many people say I always vote for this party or I always vote for that party or I always vote for the party my great grandparents always voted for, you know, and therefore they may look askance at that party and say, well, how can I continue to vote for you when you've got this guy running? Should they be able to uphold a morality, you know, from way back and say, sorry, you know, you can run, you have the constitutional right to run, just not for this party. So, you know, would we find that we have a huge number of independents running because no party wants to back them? And, you know, the one thing we know about running for office is it's expensive. Yep. So if you have the backing of a party, some of those costs at least will be covered by the party machinery and by, you know, the party itself.
Whereas and that's why parties are quick to get rid of you if they feel that's there because we're not going to blow a whole bunch of money now that they've hurt the cause.
Not only hurt the cause, but, you know, perhaps they believe that person no longer has a chance of running and they'd rather
winning. That's right.
Yeah, of winning. And then, you know, let's get somebody in who can actually, you know, help us
stands
get
the
numbers
best
of
chance.
Seats we want. Yeah. So, you know, I can see not obliging any political party to have running for it a candidate they feel is not going to do them any good at all. But we still come down to this question about, you know, who can run. Now, it used to be that you couldn't vote if you were in prison. And it took the Supreme Court of Canada to overturn that and say, yes, you know, actually, you can vote. You can't run for office if you're currently in prison. Do you think we should overturn that? Should we permit people to run for office while they're in prison?
Come into my oval, the whole oval point. Cell.
The point of it is that we choose, right? We choose who to vote for. And if we start putting, adding restrictions or whatever, changing the system around and who can be, who can run for office, then it kind of, in my opinion, defeats the purpose of democracy. So maybe.
The problem I have with that,
I don't know,
is that, again, it comes down to location. We have other reasons and other laws in place where people can't stand for office if they live out of an area. Then we've had different things that we've put into question about how come somebody else can't run for an office. And then what happens? Can that person, if they were elected in, could they carry out the duties? Well, it's pretty hard. You're not going to get that many day passes to go out.
It depends how long the sentence is, right?
That's right. You know, and you can't say, well, there's a gray area here. Well, really, no. It's like somebody who says, I live in Australia. I'm running for a position in Canada, but I'm still going to live here in Australia.
Yeah. So it might be that. I mean, canvassing's going to be pretty difficult. You're certainly not going door to door if you're incarcerated.
And you're not likely to be backed.
One never knows, right?
You know, I know. Going back to a few years ago, when
yes, I mean, if you think about some of the candidates who have run for various offices, you realize that not everybody has a squeaky clean reputation, and no. Some of them are just downright bizarre.
Pretty hard, you know, if you're a human.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I'm really concerned, to be honest, when, you know, somebody is reported to have either said or written something that is generally offensive or offensive to certain people, and they're you know, kicked out of their political party, I understand it from the party's point of view completely. Mm-hmm. But if you think about it from the candidate's point of view, they're the same person who was willing to give up, you know, their own personal time. You know, I mean, to do a public service, you know, running for office is a public service. Certainly representing a constituency is a public service. You know, where would you draw a line if you were given the pencil with which to do it? Where would you draw a line and say this kind of person or this kind of behavior is beyond the pale? Oh, I guess we're running out of time.
Yeah, so we get off the hook and answering that. Exactly.
Rhetorical question.
To all ask ourselves, for sure. Danielle McLaughlin in here for Know Your Rights, folks. We've been having a conversation pertaining political candidates being fired for conduct that came to light when they decided to run for office. We'll step aside for a moment. When we return, we'll wrap up the program.
Hi, I'm Stephen Scott. Join me every day for Double Tap. It's a show where we occasionally talk about technology for blind and partially sighted people. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts.